This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and when I start my workday, it always begins with that morning shower. Normally, I use a liquid body wash, but recently I purchased a bar of Sterling Soap Company's handcrafted bath soap and decided to give their Deep Blue Sea handcrafted bath soap a try. Immediately, the aroma of Sterling's bath soap was obvious, and in using this soap, I felt refreshed, clean, energized, and Sterling's bath soap helped me step out of that shower with the momentum and eagerness to get my day rolling. If you want to get a refreshing wake-up call in the morning and get your busy day off to the right start, I highly recommend going to Sterling Soap Company's website and order one of their many varieties of bath soaps among other products they offer. Visit Sterling Soap Company at sterlingsoap.com. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello and welcome. I'm Dana Augusta, your host, and this is something new that we're doing here at the Historically Speaking Sports Podcast. Each week during the NFL season, we would take about three or four games from that week's schedule that are rematches of famous games in the long and storied history of the National Football League. Some were very memorable playoff games, while others were memorable and remarkable in other ways. One of the games that we would highlight in this opening week of the 2024 season is the only postseason loss for one of the greatest coaches in sports history, while another was a memorable AFC title game that saw a team become only the second wild card team to reach the Super Bowl, and later the first wild card to win it. Finally, the third game remembered in this short one, in this week one historical primer, was a total blowout that no one knew it at the time would be this quarterbacking legend's final game. We will begin with the matchup between the Packers and the Eagles. On the day after Christmas 1960, the two teams that surprised the experts and arrived in the NFL championship game at historic Franklin Field in Philadelphia. The Eagles, coached by Buck Shaw and led on the field by Hall of Fame quarterback Norm Van Brocklin, would take on the Green Bay Packers and head coach Vince Lombardi in his very first NFL championship game. The game, taking place on a Monday afternoon because the day before was Christmas Day and the National Football League didn't want to play a championship game on Christmas. The title game featured the Eagles with a 10-2 record and their first NFL title game appearance since winning it all in 1949. Meanwhile, the Packers in their first NFL championship game since 1944. An interesting note, just like today when teams could turn things around in a quick way, both the Packers and the Eagles had both finished in last place in their conferences just 2 years earlier. On the first play from scrimmage, a lateral from Van Brocklin deflected off the hands of receiver Billy Ray Barnes and was intercepted by Bill Quinlan of the Packers, giving Green Bay possession at the Philadelphia 14-yard line. Opening the game in negative territory, the Eagles kept the Packers out of the end zone and relinquished just 3 points on a Paul Hornung field goal. In the opening minutes of the second quarter, Hornung kicked a second field goal from 23 yards out to give the Packers a 6-0 lead. Behind 6-0, the Eagles finally found their stride offensively. Midway through the second quarter, the Eagles found the end zone as Van Brocklin connected on his 35-yard touchdown pass to Hall of Fame wide receiver Tommy McDonald. After a Bobby Watson extra point, the Eagles had their first lead of the game 7-6. And the Eagles would extend their lead to 10-7 later on after another Watson field goal. In the final minutes of the half, the Packers would drive to the Eagles 7. But the drive would stall after Packers quarterback Bart Starr was sacked, pushing the ball back to the 13-yard line. Packer fortunes went from bad to worse as Hornung, who had connected on two earlier field goals, missed this one, and the score stayed 10-7 at halftime. In the third quarter, the Packers would drive to the Eagle 34, yet facing fourth down, Lombardi elected to go for it. And not only failed they failed to convert, Green Bay would lose Hornung for the remainder of the game with a shoulder injury. On the ensuing possession, the Eagles would drive into Packer territory, looking to take advantage of the failed fourth down attempt. However, the Packers' defense came through, forcing a Van Brocklin interception in the end zone and placing the ball on the Packer 20-yard line going the other way. After failing to gain the 10 yards and a first down, the Packers had lined up to punt. In punt formation, the ball was snapped to receiver Max McGee, and he ran 35 yards on the fake punt to not only gain the first down, but place the ball in Eagles territory. In the opening minutes of the fourth quarter, the Packers would culminate the drive with a 7-yard touchdown pass from Starr to the hero of the fake punt, McGee, to give the Packers a 13-10 lead. On the ensuing kickoff, Ted Dean received the ball at the 3-yard line and returned it 58 yards, giving Philadelphia excellent field position at the Green Bay 39. Dean provided what turned out to be the margin of victory for the Eagles with a 5-yard touchdown run on a sweep led by a key block from guard Jerry Huth with 5:21 remaining. The Packers had the ball on the final possession of the game and had crossed the 50, needing a touchdown to win. One of the enduring images of this game was the final play when Hall of Fame linebacker and center Chuck Bednarik tackled Jim Taylor after receiving a pass from Starr on the 17-yard line and held him down as the final seconds ticked off of the Franklin Field clock. The Eagles won despite being outgained in the game 401 yards to 296, with only 13 first downs as compared to 22 for the Packers. It was the only career playoff loss for the Packers head coach Lombardi, and this was the last Eagles championship for 57 years until Super Bowl 52 in February of 2018. Van Bronckhorst was named the game's most valuable player despite only completing 9 of 20 passes for 204 yards with one touchdown and an interception. A little over 20 years later, on January 11, 1981, the longtime rivals of the AFC West, the Oakland Raiders, who just 4 seasons earlier had won the Super Bowl, came to San Diego and faced off against the high-flying Chargers at then Jack Murphy Stadium. This was the first and only time that the Chargers have hosted an AFC Championship game and the only time that the Raiders and Chargers have ever met in the postseason. Now, both teams were coming off dramatic victories from the week before. In the divisional round, the Chargers were behind 14-13 to the Buffalo Bills, with 2:08 remaining in the game and the Chargers with the ball looking to get in the field goal range for kicker Rolf Benerska. Dan Fouts connected on a 50-yard touchdown pass to Ron Smith to give the Chargers their first postseason win since they joined the NFL in 1970 and their first since the 1963 AFL Championship game. Meanwhile, the Raiders, who were a wild card team, had defeated the Cleveland Browns in Cleveland in the famous Red Right 88 game. Late in the fourth quarter, the Raiders led 14-12 with the Browns driving for a go-ahead score, but instead of going for the field goal, the Browns elected to try for a touchdown instead. The result? A blindside pass was intercepted by Raider defensive back Mike Davis in the back of the end zone to preserve the victory for the Raiders. In the Raider-Charger championship game, Oakland built a 28-7 first half lead by quarterback Jim Plunkett. In the first quarter, Plunkett started white hot, going 5-6 for 160 yards against the Chargers defense. And Plunkett had a little luck along with it. On the third play of the game, Plunkett threw a pass that bounced off of running back Kenny King and right into the arms of tight end Raymond Chester as he rumbled 65 yards for the first touchdown of the game. The Chargers would tie the game at 7-7 when Chargers responded with a Fouts to Charlie Joyner 48-yard touchdown strike. Then the Raiders exploded with 21 unanswered points. The Chargers would begin to cut into the Raiders' lead late in the second quarter when Fouts found Joyner for a 7-yard touchdown with a little over a minute before halftime, making the score 28-14. In the third quarter, the Chargers began to cut further into the Raider lead. A Benerska field goal and a Chuck Muncy 6-yard touchdown run cut the Raider lead to 28-24. But the Raiders responded with a 27-yard field goal by Chris Barr to make the score 31-24. Oakland added another Barr field goal to make the score 34-24 at the beginning of the fourth quarter. Later in the period, after a Charger 72-yard drive, Benerska would add another field goal, but the Chargers would not get any closer, losing to the Raiders 34-27. Plunkett finished the game completing 14 of 18 passes for 261 yards and 2 touchdowns, while Dan Fouts threw for 336 yards and 2 scores, but was intercepted twice. Joyner caught 6 passes for 130 yards and 2 touchdowns. In this brief episode, we talked about Norm Van Brocklin and Bart Starr and Jim Plunkett and Dan Fouts, all Hall of Fame quarterbacks. Now it's time to talk about another, Dan Marino. Heading into the 1999 NFL playoffs, the Miami Dolphins finished third in the AFC with a 9-7 record coached by Jimmy Johnson. The Miami Dolphins had started strong in the 99 season with a 7-1 record, but in the second half of the year, the Dolphins went 2-6 down the stretch. During the season, Marino had suffered an injury in October and was replaced by Damon Heward. The Dolphins had limped into the playoffs but had upset the Seattle Seahawks 20-17 in Seattle in the wildcard playoffs. The next week, the Dolphins would travel to Northern Florida to face the Jacksonville Jaguars, which at that year was the number one seed in the AFC. This would be the first ever postseason meeting between the Dolphins and the Jaguars. On Saturday, January 15, 2000, Jacksonville shredded the Dolphins with 520 yards of offense and the Jaguars' 62-7 demolition at Alltel Stadium. Jacksonville running back Fred Taylor rushed for 135 yards and a touchdown on 18 carries just in the first half. Jacksonville scored 38 points in the first 18 minutes of the game, with 24 coming in the first quarter alone. Dan Marino struggled mightily in this game, getting his first pass of the game intercepted by Aaron Beasley. The Dolphins would finally get on the board late in the first half when Dan Marino connected with Aronde Gaston on a 20-yard touchdown, which would be Marino's 420th and final touchdown pass of his career. In the third quarter, with the game hopelessly out of reach for the Dolphins, Marino was benched for Damon Heward. The Jaguars' 62-7 win is the most lopsided postseason contest in NFL history since the Chicago Bears defeated the Washington Redskins 73-0 in the 1940 NFL title game. Shortly after the game, Marino announced his retirement. As for the Jags, they would lose the AFC Championship game the following week to the Tennessee Titans. And that will do it for the week one edition of the Historically Speaking NFL Matchup Show. We will try to come out with these mini episodes every week during the NFL regular season, highlighting great and memorable games from the long history of the National Football League. As usual, this podcast comes to you from the Bill King Memorial Studio in the sports wing of TM4 Enterprises, located in suburban Atlanta in the shadow of Stone Mountain. To get more content of Historically Speaking Sports, you can check us out on Twitter at HistoricallySP2, or you can send us a line at historically.speaking.sports@gmail.com. Please, please, if you have not done so already, it really helps me out. So please, please, please subscribe to the show. We're giving you new content here. Tell your family, tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell a passerby on the street about us, if you really do believe they like sports history. And until the next time I come to you, stay blessed, stay cool, and be the best in everything that you do. It will make the world a much, much better place. Later.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, aka the Football History Dude. And I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, Or who knows, maybe even write an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you gotta do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.